How you doing?
Good.
Good?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You got a mischievous smile.
Oh, no, I don't.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Wrong read there.
It's Panning the Stream.
It is Panning the Stream. That's our podcast. We talk about stuff we watched.
And we pan it, or sometimes...
Praise. Yeah. I feel like, yeah, Panning the Stream, the title, well, a good title. I'll give myself credit for that. It's not always accurate. We are frequently praising things. In fact, more often than not, we're watching stuff that we like.
Yes.
I mean,
but we are panning the streams for streamable gold.
That is true. See, that's why it's such a clever, smart title.
Yeah, pat yourself in the back.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. That's here we are, 100 and something episodes in. But hey, enough about podcasting. It's not a podcast about podcasting, is it?
Mm.
What was that emotion?
That was agreeing.
Oh, okay. How have you been?
Me?
Yeah.
You know. You see me all the time.
Yeah, I know, but we're talking into microphones. People listen to this.
I'm doing great.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What you been up to?
Playing a lot of Voxelgram.
Which, yeah, let's plug that.
It's like Picross 3D, but on Switch.
Yes, Picross 3D is the best thing, and it's perfect for portable, and the Switch is a portable console.
And let me just say, Voxelgram has the added fun of, like, instead of just creating a bunch of, you know, random disparate items like you are in Picross, like, all the little items that you're creating are part of a larger diorama. So you'll have, like, sets of, I don't know, maybe, like, 6 or, like, 10 or something little puzzles that all form things that go into a, like, themed diorama. So there's, like, a beach scene and, like, a kitchen and a bathroom, you know, that kind of thing. It's really cool. So you're making little things that, you know, are put into this scene. And so it's extra satisfying because you feel like you're building out this scene.
That's awesome. I need to, I definitely need to play that more. I've only done the tutorial. I've just been streaming all the time, so I haven't really just kind of sat down and played. Like, that's going to be, once airplanes are a thing again, that's going to be perfect for flights and things like that.
What's going on with this rolled up sleeve?
It's hot in the Pizone, okay. So I rolled it up. It's not usually a look
Ben
I do.
Ben Karras fashion statement.
Okay. It's not a thing I usually do.
No.
No.
I feel like I never see your arms. I mean, like, I've seen you naked before, but
that's true.
I've never seen, like, you know, your arms like this.
Bared arms like this?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not bad.
Thank you. That's my arms there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a Voxelgram, yeah. You know what we should do?
What?
I really enjoyed it when we watched Tiger King. Mm-hmm. And we were like, hey, this might be a good thing that we could just have on in the background while we're just like playing Animal Crossing on the couch. I'd be up for Voxelgram nights where we put something on in the background.
It's great. Like, it's great for that. I watched a Mike Tyson documentary last night while I was Voxelgramming.
Yeah.
It's perfect because, like, it's really relaxing and meditative. I mean, even the music is just like the slow piano music.
Yeah.
And it does require, obviously, some brain power. Like, there's some deduction you have to do mm-hmm. and a lot of, like, logic things and stuff like that. But you're able to kind of half pay attention to what's on the TV and half, you know, do the Voxelgram stuff. So it's really good for stuff like that. It'd be great, you know, as Ben Hansen says, a great podcast game.
Okay. Yeah, I should do more of that.
I like listening to a Moth Radio Hour. Podcast where people tell their stories and Voxel. Yeah, it's
nice.
Fun.
You also do a podcast and the puzzles that we put together.
Yes.
That seems like a good time.
Yeah, those types of activities are great for listening to podcasts. I especially like Moth because there's such a huge archive. And I don't know, to plug Moth, which is a hugely popular podcast that doesn't need plugging on our little dog and pony show here, but you know, you don't realize it, but hearing other people's stories from like different, you know, different places coming from different backgrounds and different situations and everything. It, you know, you listen to enough of it and you really start to, I don't know, it helps build empathy, you know, in the way that I guess reading would, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great podcast.
Maybe I'll give that a shot because I don't have a lot of podcasts that I listen to just like on a weekly basis. So I would like to have that, something with a deep archive that I could always go to if I don't have
It's perfect for that, yeah, because it's been going on for so long. Like, it's been going on way, way, way back. They have some people that tell stories that were recorded in, like, the 90s and stuff like that, so.
Okay, yeah, I will do that right after this podcast. But this podcast is about the stuff we watched, as we said, and we watched a whole season, one whole season of a television show.
A whole winter's worth of TV.
Yes, it was a miniseries, though, so I wonder, okay, we're talking about Devs.
Yes.
Devs is on FX. It's also on Hulu, if you would like to watch it. It is written and directed by Alex Garland of Ex Machina and Annihilation fame. Mm-hmm. Also did some work in the video game industry. I think, like, Enslaved, Odyssey to the West, and what was the other one? There's something else he did. But, yeah, he's we have liked his stuff in the past.
Yes, Ex Machina is one of my favorite movies. And you know, being so acquainted with that movie and having just watched Devs, you could definitely see a lot of Alex Garland tropes kind of start to emerge.
Yeah, he's very into science and like
tech stuff.
Tech stuff, but like with a weird, like, kind of ethereal or kind of like pseudo spiritual element to
definitely.
It.
Definitely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like all of the stuff I've seen of his, Ex Machina, Annihilation, and this, all very much have like kind of those religious overtones, but like tech religious, science religious,
yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. It's, absolutely.
So this is about quantum mechanics and determinism and free will.
It's kind of about that, but it's like the first half of it is like a murder mystery.
Yeah, and also, like, even though it has this very kind of complex subject matter, if you want to call it the subject matter, it doesn't require any knowledge or, like, that is the wrapping of it, and they talk about a lot of really heady stuff, but you don't really need to be able to, like, understand, like, I sure as fuck don't understand anything
about
quantum
mechanics. Well, obviously, yeah, we're not computer programmers, we're not, you know, able to think about things on that level, but, like, this show is, like I said, very, like, murder mystery, straightforward for the first few episodes. And then once it starts focusing on, like, what the devs are working on, once that becomes, like, the primary focus of the show, it does kind of get to a point where you really have to pay attention. And, you know, I feel like we were both really paying attention, and I'd love to hear your take on this, and maybe we'll discuss it more further along, but, like, I feel like it didn't really come together in a satisfying way, necessarily.
Not really. Like, I was intrigued the entire time. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really, really well made, and, like, all the kind of twists and turns. I thought there were a lot of really interesting things the show did, both in terms of, like, the narrative and the way they present the science stuff, and, like, when they show, like, branching paths, like, they do a lot of, like, flashbacks to, you know, big events and characters' mm-hmm. lives, and you can see, like, they show, like, branching off. So it's like, oh, Nick Offerman will be walking down the street, but then another version of him goes this way, another version goes this way, and you know what I mean, visually, how they did that?
Yeah, the when they talk about, like, the multiverse stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I think that one of the trademarks of Alex Garland is, like, just his presentation in general. Like, he has such a sleek, you know, and you talk about it having religious overtones. I feel like the devs lab is
yes.
looks like a holy structure, like a church kind of structure, and, like, everything's gold, and, you know, it's all very, very fancy.
I love the look of it. It's just, like, in the middle of this field. It's got those weird, like, kind of amber pillars out front. So Devs is, like, there's this Silicon Valley tech company called Amaya that's headed up by Forrest, who's played by Nick Offerman. And so they've got, like, a normal, like, tech campus thing, but then there's, like, the super secret Devs building that only, like, a few people go to, and they have to be sworn to, like, utmost secrecy.
Yeah, they seem to, like, take, like, the best of the best, and they bring them to Devs, which is, like, this hidden in the middle of the forest. But also, I would say it's not entirely a normal tech campus, because there's this giant, colossal
yes.
statue of Forrest's daughter, Amaya, like, looking over the trees, which is really kind of creepy. And I feel like his motivations were really obvious to me from the very beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's pictures of this girl everywhere. It's named Amaya. He's, you know, this guy who's an empty house. And, like, I don't know. One of the problems I have with Alex Garland stuff, as much as I love it, is I feel like he, when it comes to characters, that's not his strong suit. Like,
no.
Developing characters, like, just for example, Lily, she's the main character of the show. And she, you know, she was fine, but, like, I never considered her to be, like, someone who's just go for it, you know what I mean? She's just go for it person. But several times throughout the show, people describe her as that, like, someone that just goes for it and all
yeah.
this stuff. And it's like, I never really got that sense, and I really wouldn't have considered that unless, you know, someone said that. And she herself didn't really feel like, you know a little bit about her being in Japan with her father and stuff, but she didn't really have that much depth, and neither did any of the characters. They seem like to be defined by their one singular motivations. And, you know, I feel like that might be the reason why I was thinking this, you know, compared to Ex Machina, which also shares this characteristic of not having a big cast and just having like a select few amount of people. Because I don't think, I think Alex Garland's stories are so dense that if they have a bunch of characters, it'll just get in the way of the storytelling. And I don't think, like I said, characterization is not, doesn't seem to be one of his strong suits. So, you know, if the few characters that he does have are so, like, shallow, I guess.
Yeah, it's, like, their dialogue, you're right about them having, like, the trait, where it's like, okay, Forrest is, he misses his daughter, you know, and he's trying to, like, play God and to kind of resurrect her in a mm-hmm. way. You've got Katie, who's just kind of like this creepy-ish, like, she's got a real kind of, like, inhuman quality about her, like, they make her pretty creepy. You've got Lily, who's just like, I don't really know what her defining quality is. Like you said, they describe her as like, oh, she's gonna go get it, and she's like, almost like this, like, action hero type character, but, like...
It doesn't seem that, because it feels like she was just thrown into the situation.
What?
Like, I mean, I feel like, you know, anyone who goes through something like that, I mean, obviously this is a really ridiculous situation that one would ever go through.
We should talk about what they're going through, like, what that is.
Yeah. I just want to touch on this real quick. I feel like the choice she made between going deeper and trying to figure out what really happened with her boyfriend randomly, you know, committing suicide, you know, seemingly out of nowhere. When she took that step, like, I feel like that's a step most people would take. Most people would hit a roadblock when it comes to, like, unlocking the Sudoku thing. And then, you know, I feel like the narrative just naturally pushed her forward. I don't feel like, when I think of her character, that there was anything, you know, particularly inspirational, or not that she had to be inspirational, but just based on how other people in the show describe her, I don't really think she lived up to that or fit into that necessarily.
I mean, I think they had those little moments where they tried to, like, you know, when she was basically getting kidnapped by, what's his name?
Kenton,
the security guy, when she, like, takes the wheel and crashes it and stuff like that. And, you know, she does the, like, fuck you sign to the Russian dude. It just, a lot of it seems forced to me, where it's like, here's the part where, like, nothing feels natural, I think, with the characters. It all feels very kind of one note with the tones, mm-hmm. you know, where it's just like, it's kind of humorless, mm-hmm. the show is.
Oh, and, it's so, so devoid of humor. It takes itself so seriously.
Yeah, and I struggle with shows that do that. As mm-hmm. much as I did like the show, it's just that tone. Like, you know, Breaking Bad is a very dark show, but it's, you know, there are a lot of moments where it's, you know, lighthearted or funny, you know, mm-hmm. Or fun interplay between characters that kind of humanizes them more. This one, it's just so kind of dour. And, like, the few times they did try to do, like, lighten it up a little bit, like, there's this guy who is basically like an agent that is playing a homeless person in front of their stoop. They did some, like, comedy attempts with him that I don't think played out well at all for mm-hmm. me. And then, like, the banter between, like relationship banter, I don't think was very good in this.
No.
Between, like, the first episode where Lily is with Sergey, her boyfriend at the beginning of the show, and then also Jamie, her ex-boyfriend, mm-hmm. who she gets back together with. It all just felt like, this isn't how people talk.
No.
You know? Like, the science stuff, it's pretty clear that Alex Garland is way, way into the science stuff, because there's a lot of talk about that, and that is the focus of the show. But, yeah, you're right. The characters, I guess the one I liked the most was Kenton. I've always liked that actor a lot, Zach Grenier. He was on 24. He was in Deadwood. I mistakenly thought he was Todd from Terminator 2 and Mason from 24. Todd's the guy who gets the knife through the throat when he's drinking the milk. But that is, I forget his name, but I had him mistaken. But anyway, the guy who plays Kenton is great. He's got a real quiet menace to him.
One of the things that and we're going to talk about what goes down in the show, but, you know, just to keep it on a macro level right now, like, one of the things that bothered me a little bit about the show was that it's one of those deals where, you know, it's like the whole universe of the events that occur in the show, everything was just built around the main character, Lily. And granted, she ends up being, like, kind of the key to it at the end. But it's like, of course. And an example of that is, like, Kenton. He is the, like, head of security for this, I guess, major tech company.
Yeah.
But he's singularly preoccupied with the goings-on of Lily and, you know, what went down with Sergey. I feel like he would be a little busier. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, especially when they're like foreign countries are basically like trying to like send agents in to infiltrate and stuff. Like that was what started this. Yeah. Was Sergey was a Russian spy who got inside, and so yeah, Kenton killed him in the first episode, which sets off all these things.
And I want to say too another example of what I was talking about before I forget. I think it's a perfect example of the fact that there's such a limited amount of characters. Is in labs, in the devs' labs, you know, these are all the smartest people from the whole company. And you only meet two of them, really. Like, the other ones are just people lingering in the background.
Stuart and Lyndon.
Yeah, it's just Stuart and Lyndon. They're the only people from the labs that you really get to know.
Yeah. I'll say, though, that all of the actors, I think, did a great job. I think, you know, with what they were given, I think I liked all of the actors and performances.
The main character, I think her name is like Sonoya, I forget her last name, but she was in Ex Machina. She played Kyoko from Kyoko, I think, from Ex Machina. She was like the sexy robot lady that lived with the main bad guy, or main guy.
Yeah, she was in Annihilation as well, so he's used
her. Oh, was
she
in Annihilation?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
So, yeah, I was looking it up, and he's used her in pretty much everything.
She had, like, a very monotone delivery for everything. It was very slow and precise, and I don't know if that was just the way she, you know, the way she talks, or if that was, like, actual, like, direction.
The way she, like, interpreted the, like, oh, well, this character is going through, like, great heartache and stuff after the...
Well, that's not really what I mean. What I mean is she just talks extremely slow all the time.
She does. I thought she did a good job of, like, when she would stumble upon something terrible, you know, like when she saw the body of Sergey. Like, I think the emotions were really, she did a good job with that, I thought. But yeah, it's like, she's kind of got that one-note delivery, and Jamie, the guy that, her ex-boyfriend, first of all, pretty much every time he's on screen, his mouth is never closed. It's just like, it hangs open. Like,
some people are just like that.
It's weird. That would be uncomfortable, I think. It's always, his mouth is just always... like barely open
mouth breather.
Yeah, but yeah, his character didn't have a lot going on, and yeah, like Forrest, it was a very like, hey, tech company leader, you know, like
greasy hair, eats just plain arugula with his hands.
Yeah, like it felt like kind of a caricature, and then like he's talking about, you know, being a messiah and stuff. It's a bit on the nose.
It is on the nose. And like you talk about just like having really heavy-handed characterizations with things, like when they go to his house and you see him in this like pretty modest house, which I'm sure costs several million dollars in like Palo Alto or something, but compared to other like tech leaders, it's a modest little house.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they just kind of had that and just had him in his house, yeah, I would have been like, oh, that's an interesting little detail about him. You know, he drives an old Subaru Outback, you know, he's not a fancy guy.
Yeah.
But then Kenton has to bring it up and it's like, why do you live in this house, man? You could get a much nicer house. It's like, yeah, we know that.
Yeah,
you don't have to talk about it. Like, we know it's just him, you know, it's just who he is and that he's, you know, preoccupied with other things.
Yeah, it could have been more show, don't tell.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they did some interesting stuff with him in that, like, you know, for a lot of it, he is just very much like tech leader guy, you know, like a send up of those types. But then, like, he seems like a villain at times. Like, I think at the end of the first episode with the killing of Sergey and everything, it's like, oh, this is like a super villain. But then there are times, too, where it's like he just kind of sits down with Jamie or Lily and kind of talks in a very kind of matter-of-fact way that he seemed kind of friendly in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess part of that is he always thought he knew exactly what was going to happen because he could see the future and the past due to – we haven't even gotten to that yet. But, like, he never felt like he was in danger. He would just sit down and be like, well, I'm going to talk to you about this because this is what happens here.
Yeah. If you think about it, though, the fact that everything that happens in this show is because Amaya got killed in a car accident.
Right.
So he's obviously greatly, greatly affected by the death of his daughter. And yet he doesn't seem to value any other human life at all, because in his mind, like Sergey dying, Jamie dying or getting murdered, you know, they're just part of the process. Like, it's like he has no value attached to those human lives. You know what I mean? It's, I don't know.
And typically people that don't have a lot of empathy or care for other people, it's not like, well, these two people, I'm a super, you know, empathetic, like human loving father and husband, you know, but everyone else, fuck them.
That's exactly.
Yeah. Like, I feel like he would be cold. Like, you look at like Zuckerberg and he just seems like a weird robot man. I doubt when he's home with his wife and I don't know if he has kids that he's just like, he does. Okay. I just can't imagine him just being like a warm, great, you know, dude.
Well, maybe he is with his kids. I don't know.
I don't know. It's
We're talking about murder here.
I'm sure, that's true.
I don't think Mark Zuckerberg has. Well, what do I know? But I assume he hasn't murdered anyone.
I feel like that would make the news. I did like the part where Lily and Katie had the chat near the end of the season, where like basically the like kind of villains of the show are just laying it out very plainly. Like, no, you're gonna something happens, you die. We did this. We killed Sergey. Like, I just kind of like them speaking so openly about like. Yeah, this is what's happening. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, they should have just done that from the jump and avoided a lot of hardship.
Yeah. I will say the, yeah, like he said about the baby thing, the giant, like, toddler. Yeah. Like, the devs building looks so cool, but then that baby looks just...
It's creepy.
Outside of conceptually just being a really creepy thing to have, like, a toddler towering over a thing, it looks bad.
Yeah.
It just looks stupid.
Yeah,
you know?
It does look dumb. It's kind of funny and weird.
Yeah, I will say, though, that, like... Alex Garland's visual effects. I know he's not the guy like sitting there rendering the video files, but the way visual effects have been presented in his movies, I've liked a lot. They always feel very unique. Ex Machina, like the robot design is so cool, mm-hmm. I think, and that building and everything. Annihilation, those weird creatures and like the mm-hmm. weird kind of flower stuff. And then at the end, all the weird like the crystal trees or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then this, when they're looking into the future and the past, like just all the little kind of particles everywhere kind of forming mm-hmm. into images of like Jesus on the cross. It looks very unique.
Let's talk about this machine. This yes. machine is at the heart of everything.
Yes.
So at Devs, which is this, like we said, super secret like lab that this like clandestine project is going down with the smartest people in the company. And essentially they're creating this giant computer that can see into the past and see into the future.
Yes, because on a quantum level or something, they can, like they showed early on that they could predict the, like a neuron or of a toad or something where it's like, oh, we know that this is what this thing is going to do. And so through this predictive technology, they can see kind of like where everything has been and where everything is going through yeah. predicting behavior and stuff.
And like a lot of the a recurring philosophy in the show that like Forrest's whole thing kind of hinges on is this idea of determinism that like you are not, there's no such thing as free will. Everything's on tram lines, as they say.
Yeah.
And like you don't really have any choices. Like whatever happens was going to happen. Everything has a reason. And the deal with that is like we said, his daughter got killed in a car accident while he was on the phone with his wife. So if determinism is true, then they were going to die no matter what.
Right.
If he did have a choice and he didn't make that phone call, maybe they'd still be alive. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, or like, he had remembered to get the milk, because that's what they were out getting milk.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, so there's numerous different things he could have done that would have led to her, if the, like, multiverse theory and all that stuff is true.
Well, the determinism thing. The determinism
right.
is
that's
what...
Right, that's the on track.
Yeah, the multiverse is, like, the opposite of that. That ends up kind of saying, what they end up saying is true, but his whole thing is, like, because he wants to alleviate the guilt.
Yeah. His whole thing is, well, it's weird, because it seems like, for most of the show, he just wants to prove that everything is determined and there's nothing he could have done about it. But then at the very end, it sounded like it was about resurrecting his daughter, you know?
Well, I think like they say resurrection, and I think that's really just to drive home the religious allegory in the show. I mean, like in true Alex Garland fashion, at the very end, Lily is like splayed out, like she's being crucified at the bottom of the system. And I often think about the ending of Ex Machina, spoilers, where it's like an extremely religious event and they frame it that way. And like the robot rebels against, you know, its creator and then leaves. And, you know, theoretically, the viewer is to assume that, you know, life as we know it is over. But I think resurrection in this sense is less literal and more just like being resurrected in this virtual space.
Like an AI or like a simulation.
Simulation,
like a lucid
yeah.
dream type thing, you know?
Yeah, but they argue that it doesn't matter that it's a simulation that, you know, because it's just as real as anything else. And then maybe it raises the question, was the whole movie taking place in a simulation?
Right, which is, but, you know, kind of a hot topic with like, you just hear like, oh, Elon Musk is saying that, you know, we absolutely have to be living within a simulation. Like, I know a bunch of, like, tech types and stuff love talking about.
I mean, even if it's true, like,
it's like whatever.
This
doesn't is what
really
we got.
Change anything, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I do love how all of these flashbacks to, like, oh, caveman times or my daughter blowing bubbles and stuff, they're shot, like, super cinematically.
Yeah, yeah. You and I, like, we talked about this earlier because it was something that was really bothering me, too. It's, like, this machine that, like, I get it. It's a supercomputer capable of amazing things. But how is it getting this, like, cinematic shots of, like, Jesus on the cross and, like, cavemen and, like, perfect lighting on the cave woman's face?
Yeah, like a dolly, like a tracking shot going into the room of Amaya playing and stuff. Is it like, it's got to be, like, after, like, a multiplayer match in like, Black Ops, where it's like, oh, you can go into the theater mode and you can control the camera. It's a free camera. So that's what you do. You type in the timestamp you want to go to.
Right.
You zoom in like it's a Google Earth thing. Oh, I'll go into this room here. Ooh, this is a good shot here.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I feel like we've sounded probably pretty down on the show. I will say I enjoyed it overall. I really did.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that maybe it suffered a little bit for being a long-form thing in that it was very slow-paced at times.
Yeah.
And I think that the setup was really interesting and the payoff was not particularly interesting.
Agreed.
I feel like it wasn't. You know, and granted, I feel like what they did, the way they set it up, it would be impossible to give, like, put a satisfying bow on it. But, yeah, it made me feel kind of like, I feel like what went down could have happened earlier, you know what I mean? They could have cut out a lot, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it doesn't wrap up, you know, like you said, in a very satisfying way, but I think the thing that kind of nagged at me throughout was just the tonally. Mm-hmm. Tonally, it was just so dour. And, like, again, I know it's serious subject matter and everything, but look, you can do that while making characters seem more human and lighter moments and stuff like that.
Something was really bothering me that I found confusing. I feel like we didn't get an answer to was, like, in the last episode or the second to last episode, they talk when they're telling Lily, like, everything that happened when Katie's talking to her. She talks about how the simulation can see into the future up into a point.
Yeah.
And that point is fixed. And the closer they get to it, it still stays the same. And it involves Lily somehow. And something goes down and then the simulation doesn't work. They never talk about why the simulation stops working.
I think it stopped because the simulation was based on the kind of tram lines thing, and that when she chose to throw the gun out the door, she broke everything. Because, like, that ran the train off the tracks, basically.
Well, no, because it wasn't based on the tram lines thing. Because when Stuart speaks to Forrest, like, right before they go in for the last time, he tells him, like, oh, we have the system is up and running based on Lyndon's many worlds theory. So
right.
It's based on the so theoretically what you're seeing is a different universe or different, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like that's not really answered. And then the second part, how did Forrest and Lily get put into the simulation? Like, how did that happen? And not only were they put in, like, I could see if they just cut to another reality in which everything was hunky-dory, like how they show. But then how are Lily and Forrest aware of everything that went down, aware that they're in a simulation?
Because they said that all their memories were still, like, intact. But and didn't he talk to Katie when he was in the screen after the death or whatever, and he basically told her, like, yeah, do it. And she was like, and he's like, oh, here we go. Let's see how this goes. And he kind of, like, dissipated.
I just feel like I don't understand at all how that happened. And not that I expect to understand it on a mechanical level or whatever, but, like, that was just such a confusing thing to just throw in there.
It was just like, on one hand, I wouldn't want that to be like, don't give me like a weird long explanation about this like super specific thing, but also it is just kind of a convenient plot device where it's just like, I'm in the simulation now.
And maybe that's why I felt like it didn't really conclude in a satisfying way, because this kind of just happened. They're put into a simulation and that's kind of the end of it. And it alludes to how, I don't know if you noticed that, like, one of the last scenes when Forrest and Lily are talking in the field where the dev labs used to be, they cut between like different lighting scenarios, and I think it's supposed to suggest that like this, they happen to be right now in like the most positive timeline where Maya's still alive, Sergei's alive, you know, all that stuff. But there are other timelines that aren't.
He made reference, to paradise and hell, and there's like the darker, like hell world one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, I think that's why. It wasn't particularly satisfying. It was very interesting to watch. I'm super into Alex Garland doing more TV show stuff, but like I said, the pacing was definitely slow, very slow.
It reminded me a lot of Black Mirror and the problems I have with that, where it's like Black Mirror is just a lot of like on the nose, like, what if phones were bad? You know, like that, like, okay, yeah, okay. Sure, that's not like a amazing statement that you're the first one to think of, you know, like the dangers or ills of technology.
I think that's like a meme about Black Mirror. What if phones but bad or something like that?
But too much. Yeah. Exactly. And it's like a lot of Black Mirror has that same like really dour, like, oh, aren't we? We're really saying something about technology here. You know, like I kind of hate that tone as much as I've liked some Black Mirror episodes.
Well, I feel like Alex Garland treats it with like, you know, he has a really interesting perspective on it because he fuses it with like the religious stuff. And I feel like, you know, we learn at the end that it's actually Deus, it's not devs.
Right.
And then obviously the movie Ex Machina, Deus Ex Machina, and, you know, they probably relate to one another, having been both been written by Alex Garland. And in Ex Machina, it's kind of about this guy who essentially makes himself into a god by creating this new, better life form.
Yeah.
And in this show, you know, they treat the machine itself like God. So they're creating a god in some ways. So I think that having that religious perspective, it makes it less dopey. I feel like Black Mirror is pretty dopey. Black Mirror has a lot of interesting ideas, but I feel like it's executed by people that don't really treat the technology in a way that like anyone like you or me that are familiar with technology would appreciate. Like it's for mass consumption. It's, you know what I mean? It's like the kind of show that would have a video game that's just like clearly just some like, you know, readily available assets and like someone playing an Xbox with a GameCube controller, that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like it's interesting ideas, but like really stupidly done. Whereas Alex Garland, I feel like has obviously has a knowledge of tech and thinks about it on a philosophical level.
Yeah. Like it feels like a smarter take on that type
definitely,
of thing.
Definitely.
Sure. There were parts where it was driving me nuts because I've never actually like looked up, like I've heard people talk about like, oh, the multiverse type stuff and branching paths and determinism and free will. And I've never, whenever I've heard people talk about that, like free will and stuff, it's like, well, of course there's free will. Like, okay. I want to, if I wanted to get up and walk away from this table right now, I can do that. Of course there's free will. And then I like looked at the Wikipedia before we did this podcast of like quantum mechanics and determinism. And it's just like, it's just a giant thing. And there's all sorts of science and quantum particles and you observe the electron and it's like, okay, I'm sure there's people that have done a lot more thinking on this subject than me, obviously. But in my dumb guy brain, I think, well, yeah, of course there's free will. Like, hey, I'm going to raise my hand. Hey, I raised my hand.
I think it's like something like you raise your hand and then that creates a splinter of a universe where you didn't raise your hand and what would be the implications there. And
yeah, and I know there's probably a science-y way to explain like why
so
that theory exists.
Sciencey.
But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I don't know if there's a dumb guy way to explain what evidence there is that there's, you know, alternate dimensions or parallel universes, stuff like that.
Panning the Stream listeners, if there is a dumb guy way to explain that, please feel free to email us at panningthestream@gmail.com.
Yes. Well, that was what was driving me nuts, is that there's the part where they're looking at the dev's machine. It's Forrest and Katie. And one of them says, like, oh, what if we looked a minute in the future and we see that, oh, Katie, you fold your arms and then you just put your hands in your pockets and you don't do it. That's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see her do the thing because, like, of course, you could do that. You know, like, I don't know. It feels like one of those, like, impossible to explain things like, oh, how did John Connor go back in time and or Kyle Reese went back in time and fathered John Connor, you know, like how did he exist? You know, you know what I mean? Like one of those weird like conundrums.
It's like a paradox. Yeah, they kind of touch on it like a little bit in the show when they cut to that scene where Katie's in the classroom, like when Forrest like first meets Katie and she's in the classroom, supposed to be in college, I guess. She looks like she's not a college student. And the lecturer talks about like, as soon as you, something to the effect of, and let me preface this by saying I'm an idiot and I'm probably reading this wrong, but when you look, as soon as you look and observe the quantum particles, they change. Like they can't be, it's like that
Schrodinger's cat.
Yeah, it's like that cat thing.
I've always thought that's horseshit. Where it's like, well, it's both dead and alive at the same time. It's like, no, it's not. It's one or the other. And it's in the box.
Yeah, but you don't know, so it could be both.
But it is one of them.
Well, yeah, but you don't know, so.
Right. It doesn't matter what I know. That cat's either dead or alive. I don't. Like, that's another thing where it's like somebody explained that to me, I think, on Giant Bomb. And I was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It has to be one or the other. And then I, like, looked up the Wikipedia, and it was one of those things where it's like, scroll down. It's like, oh, this is, there's a lot going into this.
Yeah. I think it's like, you know, it's either, it's exists in both states, right? And if you were to open the box and see that the cat's alive, that's like, well, obviously now it's alive, you see it, it's changed, or if it's dead, you know what I mean?
But it doesn't exist in both states. It's one or the other.
Anyway, so yeah, I think like by seeing those projections, you should be able to then change your behavior. You know what I mean? Like, all right, I see in, as soon as we're done with this podcast, I'm going to get up and stub my toe. So yeah. I know to be very careful when I stub, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It should change it. But
that's probably a hard thing to like show.
It is. Right? And I think Lily, you know, throwing the gun is her deviating from that. And as they say in the show, again, very heavy handed with the allegory that she commits the original sin.
Yeah. Yeah, that. And then that was, man, they were really going hard in that last episode with that, with the original sin. And it's like, oh, you know, the thing about messiahs, they get resurrected. Mm. Oh, you know, the thing about messiahs, they're false prophets. It's like, okay, we get it. We get what you're doing here. It's all very heavy handed stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, here's a we'll get to an actual Hugh question before we end this episode, but I've got my own based on the show. For
oh,
you.
Lay it on me, Reichert.
If we had an extra room in this apartment and it was just the devs or dais screen and technology, what would you do with it?
I don't think I would want to see into the future. I feel like that would ruin a lot, but I'd be curious to go back in time and like look at dinosaurs.
Yeah, I would do that, especially if we had the, like, you know, Black Ops theater mode camera that they have.
Yeah.
I would love to. I would do a lot of the obvious stuff, you know, Kennedy assassination.
Yeah,
figure out what's
totally
going on with that, you know, all sorts of, like, you know, behind closed doors, like, you know, things that like the public never knew about.
Yeah.
Or whatever, like, you know,
I wouldn't necessarily want to see anything involving people that I'm close to, my family, or because
no.
I wouldn't want to violate them in that way. But I feel like, you know, something like Kennedy assassination or like the Big Bang, like crazy shit.
Yeah.
Like that.
Tell me if I'm wrong here. I think I've got an idea of something you would definitely have fun doing, which is you are obsessed with, maybe obsessed is a strong word, correct me if it is, but stories about like mysteries, like, oh, this person just vanished.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows.
Oh my God,
you know?
Maura Murray. Oh my God. What the hell? What happened with her?
So would you do?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Like all of those different stories,
yeah.
Like figure out what happened, or that girl that was in the elevator and got found in the water tank in that,
yeah,
that hotel, like
Elisa Lam.
Just figure,
yeah,
out what's going on. Yeah.
That's a great idea. I would totally do that.
I would do the future just for the, like, Back to the Future, like, hey, figure out the lottery numbers thing, just so, you know.
Yeah. But just for that. I wouldn't want anything, like, personal.
I would do stuff where it's like, hey, let me look 1,000 years into the future and just see what New York City looks like. You know, like, not about my life.
But what if you did that and it was just a crater? Like, humanity was gone. Wouldn't that make you feel weird?
I would feel weird, and then I would just scrub the timeline back as far as I could to just be like, is this going to happen in my life?
I wouldn't want to see it.
I would want to make sure it doesn't happen in my life, or if something happens, that I move away from New York City before that happens.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to live with, like, this constant fear, like, of just knowing this thing is looming. Like, if someone was able to come to me and tell me exactly the day I was going to die, I wouldn't want,
yeah,
to know that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it would also suck if you knew the future, because, you know, the second you start telling people or, like, warning people, they're going to throw you in the loony bin.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
what happens in every movie where that goes down.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, with Sarah Connor, she did some good personal work when she was in the loony bin.
Yeah, she made the best of that time. God, she's so cool.
It's maybe the coolest character transformation I've ever seen between, like, two movies.
Oh, yeah. She goes from just, like, an average girl, just living her life,
waitress,
and then this fucking bomb is dropped on her. Like, well, eventually, literally a bomb.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and then she just knows, like, the whole of humanity rests on her shoulders, and she becomes a super badass.
God, and, like, not enough is said about Linda Hamilton. It's like, you could do that with, I bet there are a lot of good actresses that just wouldn't be able to make that believable. Where it's like, oh, you just kind of play this, you know, helpless waitress that's getting stalked in a horror movie in the first one, but then the second one, you're a badass. Like, I'm trying to think, like I couldn't see, like, Anna Kendrick doing that, you know, whereas, like, Linda Hamilton.
Anna Kendrick is the most, like, slight little fairy of
that's
a woman.
That's what I'm saying. I can't see her doing pull-ups in a cell and, like, beating the shit out of people with, like, a broken broom handle and stuff. But Linda Hamilton, you know, she didn't seem like a badass in the first one. But in the second one, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And it makes
really
so
cool.
much sense from a character perspective. It doesn't feel forced at all.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's what would happen.
Of course.
She gets fucking serious. She knows guys that have, like, underground weapons bunkers, and she's just a total badass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sniper, and, like,
the movie rules.
God damn it, it's so good. Yeah, I'm trying to think what I would do with the devs thing. I think I'm kind of on the same boat with you. I'd solve some mysteries, would look into general future things, get rich off it.
Oh, yeah. That would be an easy way to get rich.
Yeah, lottery stuff. Yeah.
Stock stuff.
Yep. Yeah, totally. Stock stuff. The sports almanac thing from Back to the Future. Have you seen Back to the Future, too?
Yes.
Okay. It's a good one. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed watching the show.
Yeah, it was great to watch. I feel like, yeah, we you know what? As I was watching it, you know, Dan and I, we try not to talk about what we're covering for the podcast until we're recording. So I had a lot of, like, pent-up stuff that I wanted to talk about, and I feel like it was all, seemed all largely negative. But I really enjoyed watching it. It was very intriguing, very good mystery, even though I feel like it didn't conclude in necessarily, like, a satisfying way. You know, it does raise a lot of questions, interesting things to think about. I don't think it's something that you can watch casually. I think it's something that you need to have your rapt attention.
And it's memorable, too. I think I'll remember this show because it's like it's unique.
You definitely. Know, there's not a lot of shows like that.
No. So, hey, give it credit where credit's due there.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I would, too. So hopefully we didn't sound too down on it. But before we wrap things up here, we've got a Hugh card in front of me. We've got the theme song in the background. Thanks to Tom Otta for this theme song. All right. Here's the huge question. Would you enjoy sharing a meal with your clone?
Yes.
You would?
Yeah, why not? What else, like, if that's all I can do with my clone, yeah, hell yeah.
I would do it, but I get weird about stuff when it's like, you know what you look like. You've seen pictures and videos and stuff of yourself. But, like, when I think about, like, because I'm inside my face and head right now, so I don't see myself live.
You're missing out. You're quite cute.
Oh, goodness. Jeez. But you know what I mean? When you, like, walk through, like, a hall of mirrors and you see, like, live, you see, like, different angles or perspectives of yourself that you don't
profile.
See?
I hate, like, when I'm in a situation where there's two mirrors and, like, I could see the side of my face. I just hate my schnoz. I feel like I'm a big old schnoz.
Oh, I think you're the cute one. but you know what I mean? It's kind of freaks me out, like, because I'm in first person all the time, and it's weird to think that other people are seeing, like, you see me moving around, and you see my facial expressions, and it's just weird. I don't know how to describe why that weirds me out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it'd be really interesting. Like, obviously, yeah. If I was given that opportunity, I wouldn't say no. You know, it'd be a weird thing. I don't really know what I would talk about with myself.
Yeah. I would just want to, like, observe behavior and be like, wait, am I inseparable?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you're not. You're wonderful. But I wonder if, like, I would be like, am I the real one or are you the real one?
Oh, yeah. That old trick. Yeah.
What would happen if you had to live with two of me?
We'd have to have a lot of discussions about how we're just dealing with this.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a very weird thing.
It would be like a, what's the name of that show we watched for the podcast with the guy that does the Mac and Me Conan with
Paul Rudd? Oh,
yeah, that Paul
living
Rudd
with
show.
Yourself. Yeah, yeah.
you'd send one of the bonks away to live in Malibu or something, or Florida.
Yeah.
Some weird island.
And they get really
Florida.
Bitter and, yeah. Yeah. That's a show that was a fun concept, but maybe wasn't actually that great to watch, you know? But anywho, did a whole episode about that one if you want to hear that. Anything else? Uncut Gems is on U.S. Netflix now. If anybody wants to watch that and listen to our episode we did back in February of Uncut Gems.
I highly recommend it. That movie was quite a thrill ride.
That movie kicks ass. It is great. But I guess we will move on to thanking all the patrons.
Thanks, patrons.
On patreon.com/paintingthestream. We do pretty simple over there. We got one $5 tier. It's an ad-free version of the podcast each and every week. And you also, you get it early. You get the episodes early, Saturday instead of Sunday. And occasional, you know, we should try out the Netflix watch party again. That was really fun. I would love to do that with the community. And now I did introduce a Discord server. So if you have Discord tied to Patreon, you can go ahead and join our Patreon. You can join our Patreon.
You can talk to each other. You can talk to us.
We hop in there. I'm new to this. I've never made a Discord before, so I've been getting a lot of help from, like, Rock Party and Hassan, some folks in the Discord there. But, yeah, we got some channels for, like, video game stuff. We've got movies and TV. You can talk about this week's episode, just kind of general chat, stuff like that. So if you're a patron, hop into the Discord, say hi. We'll hop in there and chat with you. But always looking for new options for our lovely patrons.
Mm.
Yes. Oh, but of course. You know what the most important part is? Is you get your own personal Bonku.
A Bonku for you.
Bonk, do we have a Bonku this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Great.
This week, we are honoring our dear friend, Matthew.
Hello, Matthew.
Matthew, you know, what can I say about Matthew that hasn't already been said? He's a diamond of a man. Rare, and if you found him in a cave, you would be shocked, and you would take him to the place where you exchange diamonds for money, and you'd be really wealthy.
The Uncut Gems place.
Because this is Matthew we're talking about here.
Of course.
He's, you know, I don't know where I was going with that.
That was a long bonku.
Yeah. Okay, here's your bonku, Matthew. There in the mirror was Matthew's face, but not quite. Just who was this man?
Ooh. Man, I love the mysteries. Every little, I want to unpack all the bonkus. There's so much going on. But that's for you, Matthew. You and you alone. And if you would like to get your own bonku, you can go to patreon.com/panningthestream. I think that's about it for this week. If you want to give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast, that helps us out. Thank you so much.
You
can follow us at Pan the Stream on Twitter. You can chat with us in the Discord if you're a patron. Am I forgetting anything here? I don't think I am. Tom Monda.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom, for the theme song.
Follow Thank You Scientists on Instagram. Tom's been doing a lot of fun Instagram live streams where he's taking requests and doing crazy improv stuff. So.
I have liked those a lot. Those have been fun while, you know, I've been putting puzzles together or hanging out on the couch and just hearing Tom just kind of, you know, mess
around.
Noodle
around with guitar.
Yeah, yeah. It's really fun. So, Tom, thank you. Doing great work. And we'll be back next week with more Panning the Stream.
Goodbye.
Bye.